the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live, as always, from the InfoWars studios here in Austin, Texas. Very, very big Wednesday show we have for you today. We'll be joined by Naomi Naomi Zeit. It's a German last name. She is the first German to request asylum into America. She's requesting asylum from America to escape her tyrannical German government. So very excited to talk to her. We'll also be joined by Ian Wendt. And he's been one of the main people on X covering the updates to the Charlie Kirk assassination. We have a lot of Charlie Kirk assassination news to get into today, as well as, of course, Arctic Frost and the mass surveillance of conservatives and just the absolute tyranny that the Democrats try to make us suffer under. We have a lot of videos and just a ton of stuff to talk about. Let's get into it. Here it is, your Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 29th of October, 2025. Hurricane Melissa has screamed through Jamaica, leaving at least 30 dead as the storm heads towards the Bahamas. Cuba suffered significant damage, as well as Jamaica, and 25 people have died in Haiti after a river flooded by Melissa. Absolutely catastrophic storm there in the Caribbean. We pray for all the people affected, and it's going to be a hard time rebuilding from that. But of course, after a September in which there wasn't a single hurricane, that of course had nothing to do with climate change and absolutely had nothing to do with government control of the weather. But now this hurricane obviously is climate change's fault, and you all have to stop eating meat. Meanwhile, London police demand citizens stop sharing video of Afghan migrants stabbing dog-walking man to death. An illegal migrant from Afghanistan was arrested following a bloody stabbing rampage that left one man dead and two more people seriously injured in London this week. The horrific attack unfolded just before 5 p.m. on Monday in the town of Uxbridge. A local resident who was walking his dog in the Midhurst Garden neighborhood was ambushed by the knife-wielding suspect, who can be seen stabbing the 49-year-old man at least 15 times in a video circulating on social media. We'll show you that video later, but it's illegal to post in Britain. You cannot post this video in Britain because they don't want you aware of the catastrophically negative consequences of their policies, or else you might vote against their policies. So they're going to bring the policies in that leave families wrecked in absolutely inexplicable and incomprehensible horror and grief when your dad goes out and going out to walk the dog, honey, be right back. And he just never comes. He never comes home ever again. And that family will never recover from that attack. So they do this to you and then they silence you from talking about it so that they can keep doing it more. That's why. Meanwhile, President Trump has called Jack Smith a, quote, deranged criminal, says Democrat thugs should be in prison for illegally surveilling Alex Jones and GOP politicians. He posted this on Truth Social. We'll get back into that a little bit later. This, of course, having to do with the new revelations about Operation Arctic Frost, the completely illegal surveillance campaign against Republicans of all stripes and levels. Meanwhile, Israeli strikes in Gaza kill at least 104 people, including children, hospitals say. And now the ceasefire is back on. Don't worry, it's back on. They took a brief break to slaughter a couple dozen children, but now it's a ceasefire again. So everybody calm down. So it's about as good of a ceasefire as you can hope to get with Israel as one of the belligerents in the contest. But we'll get back into that. Basically, they've killed an average of something like 15 to 20 people a day since the ceasefire went into effect. So I guess you can call that a ceasefire. Finally, we have this. Cash Patel shuts down Charlie Kirk foreign intelligence probe, an explosive feud with Trump's counterterror chief. So apparently Joe Kent, who is a friend of the show, he is working under Tulsi Gabbard. He was looking into foreign connections into the murder of Charlie Kirk. And Cash Patel apparently had a shouting match with him in the White House. We'll bring you the details of that, but the reason given is not sufficient for me. They claim it's to stop the defense from getting, you know, from having an argument that other people were involved and doesn't pass the smell test. Doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense, which means there's probably another reason. Why would the FBI want to shut down a probe into foreign involvement in the Charlie Kirk murder? I wonder why they would want to do something like that. What could that be about?
Alex Jones, patriot, a man they tried to silence, They came for his voice, his platform, his life. But they can't stop him. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's most unstoppable force. Alex Jones will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger. Faster. Louder.
Go to alexjonesapp.com, the number one news app in the world.
Yes!
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this live edition of The War Room for Wednesday, the 29th of October, 2025. I got so many videos to get to. It's just outrageous. And we got a lot of conflicts to cover, I guess is what you could say. We've got the radical Democrats versus the Chuck Schumer Democrats. We've got the radical right-wingers versus the Zionist right-wingers. We've got Israel versus everybody else in the world. We've got the tyrant, old-school Obama-era Democrats and stay-behind network operators committing treason, and the still-remaining deep state subversives in the FBI. We got a lot of subversion going on, basically, from every different angle. And I don't even know where to start. I genuinely don't even know where to start. Let's start with clip 23. This was the last video I brought in. It'll be the first one we start with because it's rattling around in my brain. It's rattling around. And this is Barack Obama. He was the president one time. And he's got some interesting ideas. He's got some very interesting ideas about, the First Amendment and how we should proceed into the future with free speech as a barrier to progress and what we can do about that. Let's go to clip 23 here. Barack Obama saying the quiet part out loud here, trying and, in my opinion, failing to use that classic Obama charm to make what is clearly a tyrannical and just outrageously anti-American stance sound reasonable. He fails. He fails in this because what he's suggesting is not reasonable, is not even something that should be considered by any American. Let's go to Obama, let him explain it, and then I'll explain why it's retarded. Here's Obama.
Part of what we're going to have to do is to start experimenting with new forms of journalism and how do we use social media.
Let's go and pause it. Let's go and pause it real quick. We have to experiment with new forms of journalism and social media. Well, we're doing that. No, we're actually having some amazing results with our experimentation. Actually, real people, real human beings, not avatars of a technocratic global slave system. Us real human beings have been conducting all sorts of experimentation. We're actually really fine-tuning our experimentation at this point. We have been experimenting with journalism and social media. That's what you want to stop. That's what they want to stop in its tracks. Just to clarify, when he's putting this in terms of we have to experiment with new forms of journalism and social media, actually, there are new forms of journalism. There are new forms of social media. We dominate on all of them. That's what they're trying to stop. They're trying to forcibly drag us back to a world where they got to control everything that we said. And they're framing this attempt to reclaim monopolistic control of the minds of America by framing it as some experimentation and new forms of journalism, social media. Sorry, let's go back. This is the experiment. You're being experimented on right now by me, live streaming to tens of thousands of people on X, reaching more people than CNN does with cable. So this is the experiment. It's going wonderfully. Thank you for asking. What contributions do you have, Mr. President?
Reaffirm facts, separate facts from opinion, We want diversity of opinion. We don't want diversity of facts. That, I think, is the one of the big tasks of social media. By the way, it will require some government, I believe, some government regulatory constraints around some of these business models in a way that's consistent with the First Amendment, but that also says, look, there is a difference between these platforms letting all voices be heard versus a business model that elevates the most hateful voices or the most polarizing voices or the most dangerous in the sense of inciting violence voices. And I think is going to be a big challenge for all of us that we're going to have to undertake.
Oh, is it? Is that going to be a big challenge for all of us who have to undertake? So again, the way he words things sounds sophisticated. It's not. It's absolutely not. All he's saying there is, yeah, government's going to have to control speech. You can boil that whole diatribe down into one phrase: government control of speech. That's all he's saying. But he's phrasing it as, you know, we'll have to have some government oversight, some government restrictions on these business models. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So you want to censor Americans. That's what you're saying. You want to censor Americans. You're saying we want to have a diversity of opinions, but not a diversity of facts. Again, I'm not going to insult you by actually trying to contend with the words that he said. They don't actually mean anything is the issue. They don't actually mean anything at all. All he's saying is government control of speech, and that's it. And that's that. I mean, we could argue about, like, well, certain facts are offensive to some people, and if you spread certain facts, they'll be considered hate speech. While on the other hand, you don't want a diversity of opinions. It's mostly opinions that you have a problem with and interject with. But I really love his contribution to the First Amendment. It's, you know, it's eloquent. It's thoughtful. You know, Thomas Jefferson could take some notes. Obviously, Thomas Jefferson, big dummy compared to Obama. I think we need to add Obama's amendment to the amendment. And yeah, I think we'll all be satisfied with what the First Amendment looks like at that point. I have the First Amendment here. So as it stands now, it's the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the governance for a redress of grievances. And then we'll add on to that. Look, there's a difference between these platforms letting all voices be heard and a business model that elevates the most offensive voices. I think that's concise. It's perfect. Right. Yes, we don't want to have laws respecting free speech or the press or religion, but, you know, but do we, though? But we actually need it, kind of, because it's now, because now is now. It's the year 2025. So naturally, that means by virtue of the year it is, now it's time to, you know, throw all of our old ideas of morals and responsibility and citizenship just right out the window. Because Barack Obama's team is losing now. So obviously the First Amendment is broken and needs to be amended to say, quote, look, there's a difference between these platforms letting all voices be heard and a business model that elevates the most offensive voices. So, you know, obviously a very well thought out and well considered. You're not going to censor us. I'm just, all of this is facetious. All of this is to say they really are desperately trying to find just the right combination of words to make censorship not seem like censorship. They're testing all of these different combinations of phrases to try to tell you that your free speech is dangerous and you have to let daddy government come in and dictate what is and is not fact, what opinions are valid and what are offensive, okay? By which, you know, but then the way Barack Obama says it is we have to experiment. We have to do some experimenting, some new forms of journalism. No, we are experimenting with new forms of journalism, and we're kicking your butt on every front, and that's just how it goes. Should we listen to some more Democrats? There's one thing that I've noticed, and Democrats are, you know, for the most part, theater kids. Theater kids is the way to think about it. They have no experience. They have no actual passion, really. They're very good at seeming sincere about things, but not actually meaning it. And you have to look at their hands. You have to watch their hands. We're going to be studying the hand movements of Democrats today. Now, obviously, one of the biggest stories in the country still is this government shutdown. We can get into exactly what's behind the shutdown and everything. But the Democrats are not weathering this well. They're not handling this in the way that they should. And other Democrats are trying to tell that to them and are getting shut down at the Democrat panicking. Let's go to clip 18 here. This is Jake Tapper asking a Democrat if this is really the best idea. And then, boy, she goes into a diatribe that I think a deaf person could understand. Watch your hands here. You have to understand. You have to watch your hands while she's doing this. You'll get what I mean when you watch it. See, when I talk, I'm usually clasping my hands right here. Maybe I need to do a little bit more. Maybe I need to do a little bit more Hitler style kind of, you know, oration stuff. But because clearly it's an effective method. Here's Jake Tapper asking the Democrat a very simple question and getting absolute gibberish and a bunch of hand motions in return. Let's watch.
Should the Democratic senators from New Mexico, your home state, vote to open the government so that these SNAP funds are not at risk?
Let me be clear. The administration is choosing to starve American children with money that they already have appropriated.
I'm not applauding their tactics.
By the White House. Well, this is a choice by the White House.
This is also, Congresswoman, this is also a choice by Senate Democrats to not vote to open the government. Yes, it is. I understand why they're doing it. They're doing it because they want Medicaid funds restored. They're doing it because they want Obamacare premiums to be extended past the end of the year. I understand the reasoning.
Sir, let me just be clear. The money for contingency plans is sitting there. That is why the states are suing. The White House is withholding funds from
children. 2 to 3 weeks worth of SNAP funds. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it may not be a big deal to you, but let me tell you that for grandparents literally are feeding their children.
My point is that it's a short-term solution.
Those accounts,
it's a short-term.
At the end of the day, people need to be able to feed their families, and Saturday is when those funds run out.
If you feel so strongly, Congresswoman, why not ask the Senate Democrats from New Mexico to vote to open the government so that the SNAP funds...
Sir, I am here in the House of Representatives. It is shut down. I am fighting to get the government reopened. I am fighting to get funding put back into SNAP that is already existent, and I am fighting for the American people. I am here. But show me a single Republican that is here. Not a single one is here to make sure that Americans are fed on Saturday. That is why I am here.
Democratic Congresswoman Melanie Stansberry from New Mexico.
Amazing stuff. CNN host clashes with Democrat lawmaker over government shutdown SNAP funds. The reason I'm hyper-focusing on the hand motions here is because this is a particular hand motion. It's risen to prominence thanks to TikTok, and I want to explain the physiology behind it. In fact, I should have brought in the person that made a great video about this named HoMath, HoMath. It's the hen peck. That's what that is. That's what this motion is. And you can compare it. There's some other sort of... iconic hand motions, right? Typically an open palm is inviting. It's peaceable. The fist is, you know, warlike. Bill Clinton had this interesting fist where he'd put his thumb onto, you know, this motion. And it's so it's not quite as strong because you got the thumb up instead of the fist motion. It's a little, and these things, you know, subtly, they tell people how they're supposed to react, how you're feeling. Now, this hand motion is a new one. It's from TikTok mostly. It's the hen peck. It's not powerful. It's not open and inviting. It's condemning, and it's sort of nagging, but they sort of punctuate every word like a hen pecking at you. So that's what that motion is. It's very popular with young women. Young men don't do it as much, but that's what she was explaining there. You know, when she's pecking at you or you know, nagging you, telling you why you need to do what she says, but she doesn't have any power to do it, so she's just pecking at you, pecking. So that's what that hand motion is. This is a study here. It's not the only video I have. Let's go down to clip 30. This is Chuck Schumer blaming Trump for the shutdown. Now, I don't really want to explain what this hand motion is, okay? But I'm just saying we're going on one end of the spectrum to the other. On one end, we have that young woman maybe a little bit too dramatic with her flourishes. And I'm here in the Capitol. Where are the Republicans? I don't see them. Chuck Schumer goes the other direction. I think maybe he could do a little bit more. He could do a little bit more hand movements. Okay, let's go to Chuck Schumer blaming Trump for the shutdowns. Let's watch.
On Saturday, for the first time in American history, a vicious, heartless president is cutting off food stamps to hungry children, elderly who can't afford enough food to feed themselves, veterans who are down on their luck, all because he wants to use them as hostages so that Democrats will stop fighting for people's health care. We can do both, provide better health care and provide SNAP benefits to the tens of... He says there's no money to provide food stamps because
of the shutdown.
All right. That's bullshit.
Chuck Schumer's dropping four-letter words here because he thinks it makes him more human. See, this is the problem. Remember we showed you. I should have it like stapled to the wall somewhere around here. The Democrats paid some PR firm like tens of millions of dollars to tell them how to seem more human, how to seem more relatable and not like robotic lizards. And they were told you should curse more. They're told, you know, cursing actually makes people more trustworthy. But of course, that's in a situation where cursing is rare or it's in like casual conversation. And you can seem a little bit more, you know, sincere when you curse because it means you're not, you know, filtering yourself. The Democrats, again, because they're not human, because they're like robot lizards, they're just like, oh, curse more? Okay. And so they just like start cursing like sailors all the time. Like they have no concept of just like, hey, just be yourself. They're like, what? No, tell me what to do. So Chuck Schumer's been told to curse, and so now he's cursing up like a sailor. But he had a very interesting, this is the tantrum. That's what this movement is. It is the toddler tantrum, and it's what children do when you tell them they can't get their way. It's another weak movement. It's not a strong movement. It's a weak, childish, complaining tantrum movement. When you tell them they can't have ice cream, this is Chuck Schumer as a baby being told he can't have, I don't know, what do lizards eat? He can't eat the goose eggs. He's not being allowed to unhinge his jaw and swallow the goose egg whole, and he's angry that he can't do that. So I'm telling you, you can listen to their words, but it's the body language says 90% of communication. And what the Democrats are saying is, do what I say, I'm going to henpeck you to death, and give me what I want right now. These are the hand movements that we're paying attention to, okay? Now, if you want to know what the shutdown's actually like, if you don't want to hear from the henpeckers or the, baby, the big old baby, which again, I mean, I just can't think of Chuck Schumer without seeing him leering over the raw hamburgers. Just cooking some burgers with my family, just like we always do. It's just like, dude. So, like, especially when he's talking about food, you know, it's like, do you even eat food? Do you even know what that? Can you even relate to Americans that consume food for nutrients? I'm not sure. He's like, people all over the country, they're not getting their fresh children's blood delivered like a milkman in the 50s, like I do. People all over America, they don't have the raw meat patties to shove in their gullet when it's feeding time. He's a lizard. The joke is he's a lizard. Let's go to this new video. This young man explains what's really going on with the shutdown and why it is just entirely the Democrats' fault. And this is actually the explanation, not the ridiculous nonsense from the panicking lizard Democrats. Let's watch.
Why is the government shutdown not a both sides issue? Why are the Democrats to blame? Well, Democrats are using a short-term spending bill to push long-term policy changes that don't belong there. They've said it outright. They will not vote to reopen the government unless their healthcare demands are met. What they're demanding is an extension of temporary COVID-era spending that artificially lowered healthcare costs under the Affordable Care Act. Those measures were not part of the ACA itself. They were emergency subsidies created under the American Rescue Plan Act and later extended through 2025 by the Inflation Reduction Act. When that spending expires, the ACA simply returns to its original pricing framework. Not a spike, not a crisis, just a return to baseline after years of inflated relief funding. And yes, people will feel it. Premiums will adjust. But that's not because Republicans raised prices. It's because Democrats are refusing to admit that these subsidies were temporary. They're using the fear of higher costs, a perception they created, to justify holding the government hostage. And because Republicans are in full power, this is great leverage to make it look like it's their fault. Now, here's where it gets even more reckless. They're not just trying to extend the pandemic subsidies. They're also trying to reopen and revise parts of the One Big Beautiful Bill, a massive spending law that's already been passed and signed into law earlier this year. The One Big Beautiful Bill reshaped portions of Medicaid and other federal programs, and Democrats now want to undo sections of it by tying their changes to the current funding debate. Instead of debating revisions through normal legislative order, they're trying to squeeze them into the continuing resolution, which is a short-term bill that's supposed to do one thing: keep basic government operations funded. And that's the abuse here. A continuing resolution isn't a policy-making tool per se. It's a bridge, a stopgap to prevent a shutdown while Congress negotiates the full budget, using it to rewrite sections of existing law, whether that's the pandemic relief measures or the One Big Beautiful Bill, is procedural malpractice. Again, not the right place, not the right time. Look, the Democrats are desperate. They are held captive by the socialist wing of their party, the Democratic Socialists of America. And they know the only thing they have to appease that base is empty rhetoric about Trump, MAGA, and the Republicans. So it's not really about healthcare, in my view. It's about control, about rewriting existing law through the wrong channel and using a temporary funding bill to do it. And as more people understand that, it'll be hard to unsee the man behind the curtain.
Very, very brilliant breakdown by somebody on TikTok named Anthony Rispo, Anthony R-I-S-P-O. Those are the types of alternative facts that Obama finds so objectionable out there in the media world today. You shouldn't be allowed to say that type of thing. We're going to need government regulation of, you know, talking about them and their programs and what the effect is. Of course, it's acknowledged now by anybody. I've got so many videos here. We can at least go to clip six here. This is an Iraqi refugee talking about how he survives on SNAP benefits and welfare, even though we keep being told that that's not the case. Let's watch.
Without the government support, I cannot stay maybe month or 2 months.
Pima County Chairman Rex Scott told News 4 Tucson he's deeply concerned
about
the impact on...
See you later, then. When did the immigration law change to allow indigents into this country? Like, it was always a law that you had to be self-sufficient. You couldn't become a ward of the state. But we've welcomed millions. And yes, we've welcomed millions, as this post by C3 on X post. Why would the SNAP program almost double starting when Biden was president? Well, because America was flooded with illegals and anchor babies were born. Then the entire household is eligible for SNAP. Americans pay for it all. That's the scam. And you can see the SNAP usage rising sharply right around 2019. Part of that was COVID. But actually, if you go to the full chart on my screen, you can see that it doesn't ever go down. It goes up during COVID, then it stays up, and it rises in direct proportion and direct association with illegal crossings. Well, what do you know? So they let in tens of millions of people, put them all on welfare, and now if the government shut down because Americans don't want to pay for it.
What out there could have an effect like methylene blue and synergistically work with it to boost it and supercharge it? So I got with Bigley. They've been making supplements long before I got with them. And I got with Chase, who's really smart. And I said, I want you to go to a couple of different formulators and ask them what you think's the best. Announcing, ladies and gentlemen, Ultra Methylene Red. Now, this bottle is three times the size of an Ultra Methylene Blue bottle because it's to have the formula, you got to have a lot more stuff in it. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is amazing. And it just came in yesterday. I took it with the Methylene Blue. Incredible workout today. Clarity, focus, it is so amazing. And it works with Methylene Blue, and it works without it. And unlike Ultra Methylene Blue that you can't take if you're on a serotonin reuptake inhibitor or certain medications, nothing in this has any of those counterindications. But still consult your physician. But when you take it with ultramethylene blue, it just does synergistic things that are amazing. I mean, I had this idea like a month into methylene blue exploding. I said, we got to come out with something that's complementary or even better. This is the research from that. You can buy three bottles, get 25% off. Buy two bottles, get 20% off. Buy one bottle, get 15% off. And when you subscribe and you cancel any time, it locks it in at 50% off at thealexjonesstore.com. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen. And it's available right now exclusively. Limited first run. A little more comes in a month, but they got a limited run. Chase, tell us about what is in Ultra Methylene Red.
Well, I got to tell you, I've never been prouder of a product launch than I am of this. I really had a heavy hand in this.
So we are officially the first company through the Alex Jones Store that's ever even invented or launched something like this called Methylene Red. So I'm incredibly proud. And so we put this together as both a methylene blue super enhancer, especially with the cognitive focus benefits, the mitochondria empowerment, and the brain dropping off an extra electron for the brain cells. But it's also an incredible standalone product. I mean, just to give you an example, Alex, one of our best sellers when we were still operating the InfoWars store was Ultra 12. And this has everything that Ultra 12 had in it. 206,000% your daily value of vitamin B12 through methylcobalamin. So this is all backed by studies, by the way. We looked very carefully into this. The P5P form of B6 that cranks out GABA, serotonin, and dopamine like a neurotransmitter factory. It's got 5,000 micrograms of neurological B12 that regrows damaged nerve cells and shields your memory from the brain drain agenda from the globalists. It's got 5 grams of TMG, a methyl donor juggernaut that recycles homocysteine, fueling DNA repair and detoxifying your brain. It's got acetyl L-carnitine in it. It's a brain-penetrating carnitine that floods your mitochondria with ATP, which is basically energy and reverses cognitive aging. It's got uridine monophosphate in it, the synaptogenesis rocket fuel that grows new dendritic spines and locks in razor-sharp memory, and just so much more. It's even got the CoQ10 in it, of course, which is huge. Huge product that we've sold in different forms in the past. But this is the most impressive compilation of ingredients that I've ever seen in a supplement. I'm very proud that we launched it. I'm very proud that it's our second tincture on the market. And when I'm looking through these studies, I mean, here are the benefits that are listed. Migraine prevention, cardiovascular help, antioxidant, cellular protection. We've got neurotransmitter synthesis and mood helps people with depression, according to these studies that I've looked at here. Even energy and fatigue reduction, more cardio production, cognitive support, mood cognition, endothelial function. I mean, it goes on and on. Nerve regeneration, cognitive and mood support.
So that's what you're getting with us, ultramethylene red. Everything we sell is the most insanely powerful, best thing we can come up with, because this is what we take, and it's common sense to want to sell somebody something that really works. So that's why everybody just raves and raves and raves about the products at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. We got a lot of other news to talk about. You know, there's a weird thing going on in both of the parties. And it's sort of around the same topic, although not really. It manifests in different ways. How do I explain this? I want to talk at least a little bit about sort of the divide in the right wing and who's really causing it and what it really is all about. A similar divide is happening on the left wing, but there's a very, 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 very stark difference in sort of the extremes of either party. On the right wing, in fact, let me see if I have one of these tweets. I mean, there's like a million a day on my feed, even though I don't follow any of these people. All of their content gets shoved in my face. So many posts basically demonizing Tucker Carlson and calling him the worst person ever, and basically saying if we, you know, MAGA people go the Tucker Carlson route, it's over for us. This is from Stop Antisemitism on X. Tucker Carlson will be the demise of the Republican Party. This man must be ostracized from public forums. ostracized from public forums, insider circles, and every place in between. Otherwise, the GOP will morph into the radical abyss like the Democrats have after failing to rein in AOC, Tlaib, Omar, and their ilk. Tucker Carlson will be the demise of the Republican Party. Assuming this is from Stop Anti-Semitism, because of his anti-Semitism, of course, because of how anti-Semitic he is what they're saying. And that's obviously what the divide is over. But let me ask you, what has Tucker Carlson ever said that's even offensive, let alone a call to violence, anything that you could even frame as anti-Semitic without the most ridiculous reaching, bone-breaking levels of reaching being done to try to classify Tucker Carlson as anti-Semitic? And that's sort of the point. I mean, they could not have picked a worse avatar for their outrage. Tucker Carlson, a man who goes out of his way to, every time he ever mentions anything about Israel or Jews, to remind everybody how he's not anti-Semitic, to remind everybody how he genuinely loves Israel with all of his heart. Not good enough, because he questions them, because he questions some of the control they have over America, because he says it looks like Epstein was a Mossad agent and everybody's afraid of talking about it, and it looks like Israel's trying to get us to fight their wars overseas, which they obviously are. See, they're mad at Tucker Carlson for having the most milquetoast. This is how the Holocaust started. Tucker Carlson. Okay. So what I want to explain here is there's no big divide being driven by anti-Semites. There's no big hateful contingent of the right that is demanding that everybody, you know, denounce people that like Israel. There are very normal, patriotic Christian Americans like Tucker Carlson who have the most timid and respectful objections to the behavior of the nation state of Israel. And that alone is enough for the screeching choir of subversives to demand that Tucker Carlson, this unbelievably popular, unbelievably well-respected right winger, be expelled from the party, and everybody who likes him or has anything to do with him, likewise expelled from the party. Has he questioned the Holocaust? Has he called for just anything ever that's even remotely objectionable? And this is what I want to explain, because on the right, there is this fake divide. There's a fake divide that's being driven by the Israel First contingent, who insists that everybody has to be, you know, suicidally devoted to Israel, and if you're not, you're the bad guy and you'll be ousted until you, you know, apologize and go to the wall or whatever. On the Democrat side, on the other hand, the radical end on that spectrum, also anti-Israel, but they're insane and they're vicious, and they are at this moment reveling in the idea that they get to call for violence against right-wingers and nothing happens to them. They're reveling in the idea that they're dragging the Democrat Party not away from Israel exclusively, but away from common sense and decency and humanitarianism, just fully pulling the left wing of this country towards just vicious genocidal hatred of their own people. It's crazy, but this is absolutely the case. So it's not the same. It's not exactly the same, is it? When on one hand, the radicals in the right-wing party are Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson, but Tucker Carlson's their real aim, and he's like the least offensive person of all time. On the left wing, the end of their spectrum is like Luigi Mangione and Tyler Robinson, or whoever killed Charlie Kirk. These are not the same conflicts going on. They might have shades of similarity, but they're actually completely different. And it's so much more intense on the right wing, or at least maybe I notice it so much more intense, and the division seems so much more angry, I guess, or you know, vicious, because Israel needs the right wing. They need the Republican Party. They've sort of given up on the left wing and decided that they have to put all their eggs in the right wing basket, and they're goal, again, is to expel anybody that questions that, even remotely. So it's not like you have a bunch of people on the right rising to prominence by, you know, calling for infatada or whatever that word is. Another word. You don't have a lot of that. You do on the left. Let's go to clip 10 here. And again, I'm going to have to take this down because I cannot get a video of a Democrat where they're not cursing like a sailor now. I mean, literally, it's very obnoxious. So we'll cut this off after a little bit. But here's Jennifer Welch threatening her own side, the Democrats, who aren't just obnoxiously extreme and offensive and people that don't want to dehumanize and kill right-wingers. I'm not exaggerating. And she's celebrating some random woman saying, "I'm glad Charlie Kirk died." And she's basically like, this is the future. The rest of the Democrats need to get on board with killing your opponents for having the wrong ideas. This is the real divide. The real divide is between people who, as different as you are, I don't want to kill you. I don't want to see you suffer. I don't want your children to be raised without their father. Like, what is wrong with you people? The real divide is between people who are sincere and have a soul and might not have all of the answers, might be asking uncomfortable questions, but don't want to kill their enemies for having the wrong ideas, don't feel a seething, vicious resentment over something that's happening, you know, 30,000 miles away, and people who do, and people who do have that mindset. And that really is the divide. And it's sort of centered on Israel right now because you have on both sides of the aisle the Randy Fines or the Mark Levins or the James Lindsays who like just post images of Gaza as just a completely war-torn, desolate hellhole and smirk and smile and go, yeah, we kill people that we don't like. It's like, oh, the women and the children too? And they're like, yep, yeah, especially them. They're the easiest to kill. You know, it's like, you're not on my team. You're not on Team Humanity. You're on Team Vicious Hate. I don't know what team you're on. You're on Team Tear Everybody Else Down, and anybody who opposes you is a terrorist that deserves to die. Both sides of the aisle have these types of people in their orbit, and they're the ones causing the real division. Let's go to Jennifer Welch here, clip number 10. I'll pull us out.
Finally, if you think this Zoran thing is happening just in New York and you think people are waking up only in New York City, you're mistaken. Look at this clip of a wine mom at the No Kings March. Play the clip.
His name was
Charlie Kirk, ma'am.
Yeah, him is horrible. Horrible.
Charlie Kirk is horrible.
Yes. I'm glad he's not here.
You're glad he's dead?
Yes.
Why would you say something like that, ma'am?
Because he was horrible on the campuses, the college campuses. Horrible person.
You know what? I do the exact same thing. Well, would you be glad if I would die?
Maybe. I'd have to think about it.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Your friend just said she'd be happy if I died.
So listen up, Democratic establishment. Or we're coming after you in the same way that we come after MAGA.
All right, we can take you down. We can take you down. She starts cursing. You either get on board with like celebrating the death of an innocent man, or we're going to come after you in the same way that we're going to come after MAGA, that we come after MAGA. In other words, we're going to kill you. Like that. That's who these. This woman isn't considered a radical, you know, beyond the pale. Nobody will touch her with a 10-foot pole. She's less rejected by the Democrats than somebody like Tucker Carlson or Nick Fuentes is rejected by the mainstream Republicans. And if you think this is a winning strategy, you're delusional. You're delusional. And I'll explain that in just a second. But this really does. It's people talk about it a lot. That, you know, obviously Israel is this major divide in the right wing. It's a major divide in the left wing. It's causing all these problems. Everybody's talking about it constantly. It's infuriating and exhausting. And everybody gets that. But, like, especially on the right, you have to understand how this has all unfolded. You have to understand that from the very beginning, Israel thought it would get certain things from Trump. Trump worked with them a lot, but didn't get them everything that they wanted. So the Israelis tried everything they could to replace his people who didn't want war with Iran with people who did want war with Iran. That's what the Signalgate scandal was about. That's what Mike Waltz communicating with Netanyahu in secret, you know, later being relieved of his duties over that. Also, the guy sending the signal chat to the editor of The Atlantic. All of that was a highly orchestrated PR campaign to oust Pete Hegseth because they saw him as a barrier to war with Iran. At that same time period, you had assistants or, you know, deputies of J.D. Vance and Pete Hegseth being forced out, folks like Dan Caldwell. So anybody that was effectively arguing against intervention in Iran, war in the Middle East, was being expelled. They're providing intelligence to Donald Trump that is inaccurate, according to Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard, the ODNI, the head of all American intelligence, says Iran is not anywhere near having a nuclear bomb, at least 2 years away. But Donald Trump is getting different intelligence that he believes more. So it's not American. One thing we know is it's not American. It's Israeli. So, okay, they're providing fake information to Trump. They're providing fake information to Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner to try to destroy the peace deals with Hamas. When we're negotiating with Hamas, they bomb the negotiators in Qatar. And then the Charlie Kirk thing happens. That's a big, you know, scandal around Israel as well. And it's around that movement that seems like everybody starts changing tactics. Seems like Trump starts putting his foot down, starts really pushing for the ceasefire in Gaza, which now is, you know, barely being held together, if you can even consider it that. But he starts really pushing for that. He comes out with the, you know, International Peace Board that will be over Gaza. He brings Netanyahu into the Oval Office, hands him a telephone and a script, and says, apologize to Qatar for what you did. And then he signs the protection order around Qatar as a clear signal to Israel, you're not doing that anymore. This is the main conflict. And the same time that the conflict is going on within the Trump administration, in the wider media sphere, they launch this full force Eighth Front operation against the American media, where they're buying TikTok, they're changing the algorithm on X, and they're paying influencers $7,000 for positive posts. And again, a full push to try to reclaim some of the landscape that they've lost, as everybody has seen them being genocidal maniacs for the last 2 years or so. And the way this has come about, the way the media attacks are being wielded, it's not just about manipulating the algorithm. It's not just about buying TikTok and, you know, putting an IDF soldier as the head of censorship there. Those are very effective means, but they also launch the pressure campaigns to do things like destroy the Young Republicans in the whole, you know, leaked texts. I like Hitler speech. Like we talked about that. And I was going, well, what was the source of this beef? Why did these guys, you know, one guy's leaking, the other guy's chat. It all has to do with some sort of power struggle. And I'm talking to a person from the Young Republicans going, what was this all about at the end of the day? And they're like, well, what do you think? What do you think it's about? The guy that leaked the stuff is in charge, and he was a major Zionist guy. And there was a non-Zionist contingent of Republicans that were trying to take over the leadership. And so now you've got the Young Republican institution across the country severely damaged. You had a lot of young people who, you know, are going to have a hard time getting jobs now because of this. It's done, you know, really serious. And it gave the left just infinite ammo to go after Trump and all of his supporters because of this. Like, it just, this did huge damage to the right. And it was entirely because the Zionists wanted to maintain control and wanted to use blackmail essentially to crush their opposition. Then you have this other guy. I'm blanking on his name right now, but the same thing happened to him. Text messages, group chat were leaked, and he was forced to withdraw his, you know, offer or his application to work in the Trump administration. So they've discovered basically, and this is why, you know, anti-Semitism as a concept is so important to them. Because they can frame these things as anti-Semitic and then get people fired or ousted. And remember, this goes all the way back to Matt Gaetz and, you know, not being allowed to be AG. Basically have this power struggle taking place in the Trump administration and the American media landscape that is very obvious if you look for it. But if you're not looking for it, they all look like separate instances. They all look like independent, separate things going on that don't have any relation to one another. But when you look at them in the context of the main divide of MAGA being the not even anti-Israel, but not pro-Israel side, just wanting America, like the American first side, just wanting America to be the prime concern of the Trump administration. But they're not the ones causing the problem. The people causing the problem are the Zionists who are attacking them with everything they've got. Again, that's why Tucker Carlson is such a stupid target for them, because it's obvious this isn't about some outrageous anti-Semitism, because he's like the most philo-Semitic guy you can find. Megyn Kelly, not an anti-Semite. So these are the people they're targeting because they want no deviation, no questioning. They want full, total, like, limitless and objectionless control of the Republican Party. And that's what's causing all of this division, and that should be obvious. And again, it's not just that, you know, they'll use this and they go, so the way it goes with the young Republicans, sort of like the best example, you got a bunch of kids making jokes in a group chat. Do they really love Hitler? No, probably not. In fact, the joke doesn't even work if they like Hitler. It was a joke because you say the thing that is so clearly a joke that it's funny, right? It's like, you know, do I need to explain humor? Do I need to explain how humor works? That when somebody says, whoever's the most right wing wins, and I go, well, I like Ronald Reagan. That's like not funny, because I do like Ronald Reagan, and he wasn't that far right. So it doesn't make any sense. When you say I love Hitler, it's funny, because I clearly don't love Hitler, and he's so far right, it's absurd to say that you're that far right. It's called humor, folks. Obviously, it's humor. So they leak these messages in a coordinated attack with a liberal publication to smear all Trump supporters, but specifically people in his orbit, with the out-of-context, quote, I love Hitler, even though it was a joke. Then you have people going, well, you know, this is horrible, you have to denounce it. And then we go, no, first of all, it's a joke. I'm not denouncing a joke. Second of all, this is clearly just an attack on the right. This is just an attack on Republicans. It's just trying to destroy young people that are energetic and involved in the political, like, this is just so clearly an attack. We're not going to fall for it. Like, everybody who's falling for this are the same people that would denounce Donald Trump after he said both people, you know, good people on both sides. And a bunch of people on the right did condemn that, because they're liars. It wasn't true. It was never true. So they say, you have to condemn this. You have to denounce this. And we say, no, it was a joke. And we're not denouncing our own because the left demands it. This is stupid. And then they go, oh, so you won't denounce Nazis? You won't denounce so you are a Nazi. So therefore, you are a Nazi. And so now people on the right are trying to destroy other people on the right for not condemning a joke, because apparently that makes you a Nazi. This is stupid, and the outcome was obvious to see for anybody. What you're doing by participating in that witch hunt over the Young Republicans group chat was showing the left that this is an easy and effective way to destroy anybody you don't like. And they're seeing that that's the case, and they're picking it up and running with it. We have this. Spotted while walking around the George Washington University campus in Washington, D.C., it is a flyer that says, have you been added to a Nazi/MAGA group chat? We pay cash for screenshots. Screenshot.gop. Verifiable scandals, racist rants, and sexist tirades all accepted. The worse, the better. So now you, the right-wing Zionist, have now created, manufactured a market for spying on and doxing right-wingers. And if people are actually saying bad stuff, that's one thing. These people aren't actually saying bad things. That doesn't matter. Jokes are being blown up to be, you know, evidence of Nazism and being used to force people out of the party. And a bunch of stuff went on in the background you probably don't know about. They tried to literally destroy the Young Republicans over this. A bunch of the Young Republican donors tried to force leadership out of all of these independent offices of the Young Republicans. And luckily, the young people in the Young Republicans weren't being intimidated by this and just said, no, we don't have to resign. We're not going to resign. You can't make us. And they tried to pressure them. I mean, imagine being like a 19-year-old kid in college running the Young Republicans, and you're being approached by, like, you know, lawyers that make $100 million a year from the biggest political organizations in the country, trying to put as much pressure as they can on you to quit over this. And these young guys didn't quit. And they said, no, screw you. This is just how we talk. We're not resigning. Because what they want to do was bring in a bunch of rhino. One day we'll tell the whole story about it. But this is what's happening behind the scenes. This is what all of the chaos in the right wing is being caused by. And so now, how easy do you think it will? And you know, the effect of this may be subtle, but it will be impactful, right? The young people now thinking about being involved in the Young Republicans, I'm sure they'll moderate their language. They'll probably just, you know, not communicate quite as much, be a little bit more hesitant to bring new people in. Because now they got to be paranoid about who's spying on them, who's going to leak their chats. They're going to have to be self-censoring themselves. Like, because they didn't want the Young Republicans to be anti-Zionist, now the Young Republicans are severely damaged as an institution. They have all this ammo that, again, just gets implanted in the left's head that, oh, the right wing are Nazis and they all love Nazis and they're coming up for other Nazis in their party. All BS, but all created out of whole cloth by the Zionist side of the right wing spectrum. And it's infuriating. And it goes on and on. Harvard used to have a conservative magazine until this week. Did you know that? They were forced to shut down because they published articles laced with, quote, Nazi rhetoric. You see what happens when you go along with this? You see what happens when you give credence to these ridiculous claims? You're literally providing ammo to your enemies. You're arming your enemies. You're telling your enemies exactly what you need to do to defeat us, and then you're actually contributing to that by claiming that off-color jokes, or in this case, articles about how France is France and Germany is Germany, get decried as Nazism and forcibly shut down. And the publisher of this, the Harvard Salient, which is now shut down because of this article that says, you know, France is France and Germany is Germany. He says, this article is a meditation on how nations and cultures preserve coherence in an age of rootless cosmopolitanism and global homogenization. To confuse a defense of belonging for a manifesto on exclusion is the fault of the reader, not the writer. Right? Doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Oh, you're trying to write a publication, you know, reinforcing or making the argument for just basic conservative values? Too bad, that's Nazism now. And you have, you know, the control freaks, the pro-Israel side of the Republican Party, to thank for laying this groundwork, laying the runway for this to take off. Yeah, they shouldn't obey suspension. No, the only way to get out of this is just to refuse to comply with any of these people ever.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures about it. And I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it, I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something, what a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something, I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue, and I gotta tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. You know, it's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day.
Right.
And pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah. Yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.